How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here, Wrestling Observer Radio, July 15, 2026, figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We got a lot to talk about here today. We'll get into Dynamite.
There's so much going on.
NXT a little bit later on. Dude, I hated that Dynamite. Maybe hated is like
I loved it.
Oh my god. Are you kidding me?
I loved it.
I should just step out.
I loved that show.
Let Garrett do the show.
I thought it was awesome.
That's impossible.
Why?
What did they say about Hangman?
Nothing. He was not mentioned on the show.
He wasn't mentioned a single time on the show.
No, that was bad. I agree.
We have five matches for the pay-per-view.
I think we have
the
six.
Main event is a match that the fans chanted no, no, no for.
Yeah, but they did a hell of a job. I didn't want that match, but by the time they were done, I thought that was Kenny Omega's best mic work that he's ever done in the United States. I wouldn't say ever, but I would say in the United States. I thought he was tremendous. I thought Will was tremendous. I thought Kevin Knight was tremendous. They thought they did the best they could.
He got beat up by Darby immediately after the fans chanted no, no, no.
I know. But the mic work was awesome. Well, we'll see the big things. I mean, he's going to kill Darby next week, though.
Oh my God. Yeah. We'll get into that later. Let's start with this Paramount lawsuit.
Man, so there's at least three or four lawsuits that are out right now over this thing is really, you know, the Paramount purchase of WBD, but this one, the Attorney General's lawsuit, which is the one that we talked about on Monday, you know, trying to block it, it's going to a judge on Friday, and he will probably make a ruling, you know, within a week or so afterwards on the restraining order. The restraining order would ban the sale, or the takeover, I should say, by Paramount Skydance of WBD until the lawsuit is settled, which could be a long time. You know, Paramount and Skydance are hoping to get this thing done imminently, this quarter, by September. And this is may or may not delay it. I mean, the judge is going to make a ruling, and that's going to be a giant ruling. But yesterday, the shareholders of Paramount sued Paramount over multiple things. The Observer story. The Observer's coming out tonight somehow. Still have hours to go to work on it, but I got to leave tomorrow, so I don't got a choice. So, but anyway, so it's a very detailed story. It's all is going to be in there. Every detail is going to be in there. But the gist of it is that they are suing, basically saying that it was they paid too much for the deal. That they claim that they have paid too much for other properties that involve friends of Donald Trump. That they are putting Donald Trump in front of the shareholders in the company. The Ellisons, they're suing the Ellisons and members of the board. Very similar to the lawsuit, with WWE. You know, they, one of the things is the UFC deal. You know, basically that they overpaid for UFC to get UFC because it was a deal because of a friend of Donald Trump, Dana White, and they did that. But, I mean, the key is that they are trying to get control of, the lawsuit alleges they're trying to get control of CNN. So they overpaid for this. They, spent $111 billion so the Donald Trump can muffle CNN like he did CBS, and they feel it's not in the shareholders' best interest, and that if a new administration comes in, that they will wreak havoc on this sale and on everything that is done, particularly the fact that so much of the money that's been raised is coming from Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and what's the third country? Abu Dhabi and the United Emirates, the same country, but Qatar. So they're the feeling that that probably should have been blocked there because so much of the money there. So those countries would essentially become part owners of not just Paramount Skydance, but also, CBS and CNN and AW and all of these other things. So it's it's a real mess, and it looks like it's going to be a long, entangled thing. Rob Bonta, who is the Attorney General of California, who's pretty much spearheading the other suit that we talked about on Monday. So he's done some media stuff, and, you know, he basically said that if they were to vest themselves of certain properties, that they might back off on the lawsuit. But when it came out on Twitter that some reporters said that if they were to divest themselves of CNN, which a lot of people thought was the compromise, is like, if Paramount agrees to not get CNN and not take over CNN, then they would let it go through. But the whole reason that they're paying this money as a favor to Trump is to get CNN, you know, away from being critical of Trump. But then Rob Bonta said that that's not enough. You know, it's like this is a much, much bigger thing than just, you know, owning of some cable stations, you know, like the divesting themselves of cable stations. It's about the movie industry, the ability to, you know, monopolize aspects of that industry, and, you know, put theater chains in jeopardy and things like that, you know, actors out of work, less production of new movies because of the consolidation of the Warner Brothers and Paramount Studios, and merging of, you know, Paramount Plus and HBO Max, with the idea that that would also put people out of work, that, you know. So he said that divesting CNN is not going to be enough for them to back off on this thing. So this is a really, I mean, it's a lot of it has been expected from day one. It just all broke in the last few days. But this, the shareholders lawsuit, I don't know that one was expected. When you look back at like what happened with WWE, I guess it should have been expected. But anyway, there it is. And so, you know, I mean, from a AEW standpoint, I mean, they want this thing to go through as quick as possible and get, you know, up on the new thing, get, you know, all the stuff with the, you know, the pay-per-view money going, you know, the pay-per-view cuts, the ownership, you know, small percentage of ownership they want. Essentially, there's nothing like Tony Khan cannot do anything with David Ellison having to do with this until this deal is officially taking place. So from that standpoint, from the big, big, big picture of AEW, while they can do all kinds of things, and they are doing them, a lot of the big picture stuff, the hopes for growth, you know, getting on, you know, the streaming into more countries and on more homes in the United States, you know, getting on the pay-per-views available in more places and everything like that, that, you know, would have to be on hold until this thing goes through, as well as, you know, right now it's premature as far as any talks, but I mean, let's be serious, like this next year, 2027, I mean, that's the giant year for AEW, you know. I mean, like, whatever they do this year, they could put on all the great pay-per-views you want, and it'll help, you know, if numbers are up and things like that. I'm sure better numbers are better than worse numbers, right? When the merger, you know, that doomed WCW and killed WCW, I mean, the reality is, if WCW was doing the business they were doing 3 years earlier, that would not have killed WCW whatsoever. They'd have been fine. But, you know, the fact is they were not doing fine at the time, and it did kill WCW. So the situation here has to, you know, again, is, you know, if they're doing terrible, yeah, it could be disastrous. I don't expect that they'll do terrible. They seem to be doing pretty good right now. But, you know, as far as like, you know, the 2027 deal, I mean, that's literally going to be by far the biggest, you know, the last deal was the biggest deal AEW ever made. But this next one is bigger, number one, because, you know, any kind of renewal at that rate or a higher rate, it's, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, they're home free probably forever, you know, or at least for several years. A non-renewal, and you know, it's It's tough. I mean, they're not necessarily, you know, done, but they'd have to. But if they have to go somewhere else, it's going to be a hell of a lot more difficult. So, yeah, I mean, all this does tie in as far as AEW, as far as the delays go, especially if, you know, this lawsuit or these lawsuits keep this thing from happening into the mid-2027 period, where at that point, you know, you've got, you know, that deal. You know, the deal's going to come up at the end of 2027, so they're going to have to be negotiating in 2027. They could just punt it and go, like, you know, we'll pick up the option for the current contract gives WBD the option for one more year for 2028, and there's a price that is there. It's much higher price than you know they're getting now. It's a big increase, well into the 200s, you know, almost mid 200s, I think. But you know, that that would be kind of like the I think if things were, you know, if things were out of control or whatever, you know, they could always do that for one more year and buy another year of time. But, you know, so that's, I mean, that's essentially how it affects, you know, AEW, and it affects Zuffa Boxing, and it affects UFC, because they're all in this boat together. You know what I mean? You know, Paramount picking up the HBO Max subscribers, you know, that would open the door to way, way, way more viewers for UFC on these Saturday shows. So it's a big, big deal. It's and a very complicated deal. And yeah, it's a big story in the issue that comes out.
All right, we also got the Ludwig Kaiser lawsuit. And
not a lawsuit, it's well, a criminal case.
The point of this is that a little while ago we heard his side of the story, but not through him. Now we have heard his side of the story through him. And
through his lawyer, but it's the exact same story.
It does appear that from reading what is written in the filing, that when they recently asked for the security footage, I mean, it sounds like they got it, because this is very detailed as to every single thing that happened in this incident.
Well, it's from his words. The thing is like, the police said that the security footage included punches, and he claimed it was only shoves. And those, you know, I mean, that's not really
how are these two things? I mean,
yeah, I mean, the police report said punches.
Had the police seen the footage?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. That's when they filed the charges, when they had, after seeing the surveillance footage.
So what's this guy saying? What's going on here?
They have different sides of the story, and they're going to argue what it is.
Kaiser's side got the footage as well.
Yeah, yeah. They're claiming that he shoved him, he didn't punch him. The footage isn't going to say, you know, if he said these words.
Well, no, I mean, but the footage should show if he punched him or if he shoved him.
The footage absolutely would show if he punched him and shoved him. Absolutely. So that's what the case
I got a lot of questions.
Yeah, that's what the case should be. That's at the end of the day.
Is it possible the police saw a shove that they thought was a punch?
I have
because no if idea. I got the footage,
I have no idea.
And I punched a guy. Mm-hmm. I would not have my lawyer write a thing saying that I just shoved him, because I clearly hadn't. I punched him.
If I was a police person and I was writing up a police report, I would not say that there were multiple punches if there were none. There were bruises on the guy, you know, from punches or from and not from shove. I mean, if you shove a guy in the chest, you're not going to have marks on your head, on the head, and he had marks on the head.
Well, this is going to be interesting, because these are two different stories.
Well, cases like this
aren't we just going to, like, if this goes before a judge?
Yeah,
can't the guy just watch the footage and make a determination?
Of course, okay. Exactly. Yes, it should be.
Open. This should be an open and shut thing. What the hell's going on?
Do you know how many things should be open and shut?
I know, but we got footage. We got the security camera footage.
There's often all the time footage that sides claim to, you know, they make different claims on footage that you can see.
Well, so, yes. The judge should look at this footage, and one of these two is not telling the truth. Yeah. And the other guy should win. That's my determination.
I think that's quite obvious. Yeah. You know, I mean, If he punched him, he punched him. If he shoved him, he shoved. He still shouldn't have shoved him, but it's a lesser offense if he shoved him.
Well, I mean, his claim is that the reason he's claiming he pushed him because the man was coming towards him in an aggressive manner. So he was trying to get him back. That's his claim.
That's his claim. Yeah. Yes. Well, the footage should show. I mean, they've got the footage one way or the other. They've got the footage. And the judge is going to look at that footage and determine if what, Barthel's story is accurate or Reap's story is accurate in the police story. So, yeah, I mean, it should be an open and shut case, one or the other. One side's, either the police are not the truth or he's not telling the truth. The stuff as far as like what he said, if he said like, I'm going to call ICE on that bitch, you know, about Andrea Zerati. I mean, that one's going to be, you know, one person's word against the other, unless there's actually sound, and I don't think there's sound.
No.
So, you know, that is going to be left up to, you know, I mean, you're just going to have one person say one thing and one person say the other. You know, I mean, you got the two sides, you know, that's the basic, you know, and there is footage. And so therefore, at least to some degree, if we're going with the idea, and again, these stories are different enough that one side is not telling the truth, but I don't know which side that is. And that part, I think, you know, at the end of the day, is going to determine the case. It's, you know. But they're trying to throw it out based on the fact that he is trying to kind of claim defense, self-defense, because the guy was coming forward at him, so therefore he tried to shove him away, as opposed to he aggressively shoved the guy, knocked him down. The guy was definitely knocked down. I think both sides agree to that one. And he did have marks on him. So, you know. But, you know, I guess in the big picture, I think that the thing is that he has to show, the footage has to show the other guy aggressively coming towards him. I think that's the other key is again.
I think the footage just has to show what happened.
Yeah.
One of these guys' story is true, the other isn't. That's it.
Well, the punches, okay, the punches as far as the punching versus the shove, yes, that's it. But the other one is aggressively moving forward. Well, you know, again, I have to see the footage. What does that exactly mean? You know, you can determine that, you know, like stepping forward, aggressively and just stepping forward are two different things. So, you know, I mean, he has to justify, even if he just shoved him, there has to be justification for the shoving, because you can't do that either. Especially, it wasn't a love tap. He knocked the guy down. So, you know, but if the guy was coming after him first, yeah, I think that he will, I think that the case will be thrown out. Even if he punched him, if the guy was coming after him first, you could make a case. You know, being a wrestler ain't going to help him, but I don't know if it's going to hurt him. In another era, being a wrestler would hurt him in this case, because, you know, guys who are real fighters that no real fighting, even though this guy, you know, given his background and who his father is and everything, he probably does. But I don't think that in today's society, being a pro wrestler is going to be like in the old days where if a pro wrestler did something like this or a boxer did something like this and it went to court, they're going to lose almost every time. But, you know, yeah, one side's telling the truth and one side isn't, or they're both not telling the truth. And that could be true too.
What's up with the Vikingo?
Out 9 months is what it looks like after the surgery. That's the word that I'm
torn ACL.
Yeah. Torn ACL. Yeah, he had surgery last Tuesday. Yeah,
that's
8 days ago. Yeah.
All right. Dark Side this week.
Oh my God! So this was part three of the TNA story, and I mean there was so much to it. I mean in the sense of it really wasn't like they. I think they. I got to say that. I was disappointed, but I was not disappointed. I mean, in the sense of, as a history of TNA, I actually thought it was not good. at all. As a portrait of Jeff Jarrett, I thought it was fantastic. You know, what Jeff Jarrett and Karen Jarrett talking about him, you know, him, you know, his ups and downs with TNA, him becoming an alcoholic, him battling back. I mean, Jeff was incredible on this show. He really was. And Karen, you know, Karen, you know, was a big star on the show, no doubt about it. But when it comes to like TNA, I mean, you know, from the arrival of Hulk Hogan until today, I mean, that is a really fascinating story that probably deserved a lot more time. And it was, that aspect was so shallow. I mean, it was just basically, I mean, the whole thing is Dixie Carter was the bad guy. She was in, you know, they showed the stuff of when, remember that deal when they got Hogan and she did that big speech in front of all the talent and they put it on television?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and they really said that like a lot of the talent really lost respect. And they did. I remember that day. The talent was very, very upset. People were very upset at you know, it's my way or the highway. And if you don't like it, you can leave. You know, this is how we're going to do it. And, you know, I mean, the basic story, and this was they told us last week, too, is that Dixie just wanted Jeff gone, used the relationship with Karen to get him gone. Again, like I said last week, they don't bring up that when Dixie confronted Jeff about it, that Jeff said that there was no relationship, and that was Karen's justification when he found out that he was lying to her, that he just wanted him gone. And then Jeff says to prove that that's not the case, you know, later they brought him back to do a feud with Kurt, and it's like if she was so upset about this, she not only brought him back as a wrestler but with no power, but put him in an angle to exploit this thing that she thought was so horrible. Which, in fact, from Jeff's standpoint, I get. If you're looking for a reason to hate Dixie and think she's a hypocrite, you got it right there. Now, the way I look at this thing is that, you know, Mr. I Do Everything for the Ratings, Vince Russo, like, of course, Vince Russo is going to want to do a storyline with Kurt against Jeff over Karen. Of course he is. He could not help. You know, I mean, and realistically, old school pro wrestling, a lot of bookers would do this. Jerry Jarrett would have done it if he was still there. If he could, if everyone would agree to do it. Watts would have done it if everyone would agree to do it. And everyone, Kurt agreed. Jeff agreed. You know, so they did it. I think that Russo probably sold her that it's going to be this big ratings bonanza. I mean, I thought, you know, the Kurt and Jeff feud, I mean, a lot of it was good, and a lot of it was stupid as hell. Like, when they got to the point of, remember the one where, what was it? They were doing a match for custody of the kids?
I don't even remember that one.
Yeah, they did. They were doing, Kurt and Jeff did a match, and the winner would get custody of the kids. Like, when they did that, I thought, like, this is just so completely stupid. No one's going to buy this. And,
remember,
you know, it wasn't like ratings went through the roof or anything with this, but you know, I mean, look, Kurt's a fantastic wrestler, especially then. I mean, maybe not today, but I mean, then, my God, you know, he was one of the best in the world. Jeff's good, you know, and they had good matches, and Jeff's a great performer. You know, I mean, like, to me, like, Jeff's a really great performer, and he's a great promo. It's just, you know, I mean, some people, there's a difference. Some guys are top guys and some guys aren't. And there are guys who are fantastic, fantastic people that are just not top guys. And Jeff is one of those guys, you know, and people don't want to, you know, I don't think people know, like, now almost don't know the difference. It's just like, well, why don't they just push him, you know? It's like, especially then, but even now, you know, like, some guys are going to hang at that level and some guys aren't. So anyway, like they didn't touch on, like, you know, they're on Spike. Bischoff's on there. They talked about going on Mondays, which you remember that thing. And it was portrayed that it was Eric's idea and it was a big failure. And Eric is even out there going like, well, you know, I didn't think it would work in the long run. And it's like, well, you're the one who pushed it. You know, you're going to say you didn't think it would work in the long run to act like you were smart. It's like, come on. But in all fairness, on this one, I mean, and again, this is so many years ago, people don't remember this, but from day one when they were on Spike, Jeff, everyone tried to get Spike to go on Monday head-to-head, recreate the Monday Night Wars. It's not like, when, you know, Eric, when Eric got there, and they had Hogan, Spike was willing to take that risk. They had Hogan, they had Flair, they got Jeff Hardy, when Jeff Hardy was just got off of a run in WWE, where Jeff was actually the most popular wrestler in that entire company, but they wouldn't push him ahead of Cena because they didn't trust him, and then he quit, you know, and then he got arrested and everything, and they still used him. So, you know, it's like, you know, it's like everybody, like they're acting like what a horrible idea this was that Eric had, and it's like, everyone had that idea. That's what WCW did, you know, to get in there. And now they're saying, oh, it was so stupid to go against WWE. They're so big and strong and everything. And it, and you know, it didn't work. You know, it's like sometimes things work once, try to do them again, they don't work a second time. Every time is different. The dynamics are different. You know, the, you know, Hulk Hogan was different. You know, it's like Hulk Hogan in, you know, when they got him in 2010, I mean, you know, he couldn't save the world anymore. You know, he would have been 57 years old. You know, there's a big difference between Hulk Hogan at 57 and Hulk Hogan at 41 when WCW got him, or 40, what was he when Monday Night Wars started, 43. So, you know, trying to recreate that, it didn't work. But again, it's like, everyone had that idea. I had that idea. I talked to Spike people and brought that up from, you know, from the start, you know, like that's the play in the long run. And it wasn't, so we were all wrong, and that's the way it goes. But they made Eric out to be this fall guy, the only one who won it, the only one dumb enough for it. And then Eric goes in there and says, well, I didn't think it would work long-term anyway. It's like, you can't say that, but you know, everyone's trying to cover their ass. They, you know, on the Spike, you know, they never talked about losing Spike TV. I mean, it never even came up. They didn't even, I mean, they mentioned that, you know, they started losing money. They didn't talk about all the times that they were struggling, that Billy Corgan and the Harris brothers and all these people had to put money in so they had money for TV taping because Janice and Bob Carter had been, you know, they just said, you know, enough is enough. We've lost enough money. And we're not going to give you any more money. And they were, you know, struggling to keep the thing alive, which they did. You know, Billy Corgan put a lot of money in and all this. And then Billy thought, you know, everyone knows the story. He thought that, and he sued over this. He thought that he was going to get it. And then they sold it to Anthem, you know, who got it, you know, who now, you know, lost a lot of money on it. There was, I'm trying to think, I mean, there's so many other things in there, but, you know, again, like that whole history of TNA wasn't talked about. They did talk about a few things. Number one was, they made the switch, you know, like, you know, TNA had the six-sided ring, and then the first thing, Eric and Hogan come in, and that, you know, I mean, Hogan just thought, you know, Hogan and Eric, they didn't know anything about TNA. The live fan base was like the six-sided ring. They thought that it made it look, you know, like whatever. It's not pro wrestling if you have a six-sided ring because they'd never seen it. So we got to get back to a four-sided ring because that's pro wrestling because that's all they knew. They didn't know AAA had a six-sided ring. At the end of the day, the number of sides of the ring is a non-issue. I mean, I guess the issue is Lance, I remember talking to Lance Storm, and he said that he felt the four sides are better than the six because the six sides make it harder in more areas to bump. So therefore, four sides.
It hurts.
Yeah. The talent never complained about it.
Yeah, they did.
A lot of them did.
I heard from many, many wrestlers that talked about how much that ring sucked.
Yeah.
Some of them said they liked it because it was interesting.
Yeah.
But they all said it sucked to take bumps in.
Yeah, well, they might have said that, but I mean, a lot of them thought that the different angles and everything like that gave it something different and everything like that. I mean, AAA had been using it for years and years and years. And, you know, but at the end, that was not an issue. I mean, nobody stopped watching because they went back to four rings, even though they showed footage of people going, we want six rings. You know, Jeff was arguing about how, you know, that just showed that, that was the six-sided ring to me was a non-issue as far as the success or failure of TNA. I mean, it was something unique and everything, but, you know, at the end, it's still your star power and all the other things, your booking, your star power, your production. The size, the number of sides of the ring was a non-issue. You know, they... but yeah, the whole, I mean, the whole thing of the loss of Spike TV was never talked about. The loss of Destination America was never talked about. They focused on the Jeff Hardy Sting match, you know, when Jeff Hardy showed up loaded. And I think that they all kind of
conceded. That was the dark side.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they all kind of conceded that they probably shouldn't have left Jeff in the ring and you know, which
you don't, you
know,
say. I guess,
yeah, no kidding. With hindsight, right? Jeff was on and he was good. I mean, the reason I say that is because all these people who, you know, led to this company not having success are all out there throwing, you know, excuses out there, you know, some of which are valid, but they're all throwing excuses. And Jeff's out there and he just goes, he blamed everything on himself. He said he was hooked on pills. He said it was so embarrassing, you know, for him, for everyone. He apologized. I mean, it's all my fault. Said he learned from that. You know, I mean, the problem, you know, he did have other incidents after that, but said he learned from that. He was very nice about it, came off very, very well. And, you know, most, they didn't talk about that Jeff had other incidents, like when he went to AEW after this point. So if you just watch it, you just go, oh, yeah, you know. And Jeff Jarrett, you know, went through the whole first attempt at, you know, rehab, where he came back and the first thing from, you know, he did was start drinking. He said that one day he was at the pool, at a pool party, and he looked down and he saw his belly and he says, I am not going to have a beer belly. So what he did was he stopped drinking beer and started drinking vodka all day long. And that made it worse. They showed footage from AAA when he went down there when he was just loaded out of his mind. And, you know, he, you know, between the talk about Owen Hart. Now, they did, it is funny that with Jeff, you know, they talked about the AEW stuff and the Owen Hart tournament and that promo he did, you know, for the Owen Hart tournament, which is probably the best promo he ever did, ever. Although, you know, he can talk. I mean, but that promo, I mean, but they didn't show any of the promo, you know, and they're talking about, like, this promo turned him babyface and gave him a new lease on life, and it's like, yeah, you know, if you're doing a story on freaking Jeff Jarrett, show the freaking promo, because that promo was like the best promo that guy ever did. But yeah, like, you know, nothing about, you know, Russo and the end of losing Spike TV, which was giant, you know, just giant in the history of the company. They talked about the Toby Keith thing, you know, Jeff had his story. So Jeff's story on Toby Keith, you know, like the Carters had lost a lot of money. I would say there was someone who was very close to Toby Keith who was talking to me through all this. So I know from that side. And Toby said that Bob told him that they were down 45 to 50 million at the time when Toby's trying to buy it. Jeff had told me it was 28 million. So it's a lot of millions. I don't know which one's accurate. I heard both. Okay. But Jeff's story is that, you know, he was bumped into Toby Keith somewhere. You know, they both live in Nashville area. And Toby goes, you know, like, how's the company going? And he's like, it's a disaster. You know, Dixie's doing this and that. And Toby's like, Toby's thinking that this company's doing well. And he's just going like, well, why don't I just buy it for you? You know, buy it and everything like that. And he went to buy it. And Jeff's story was that when they went there, Toby goes at the meeting to Bob Carter and says that, is Jeff involved? And this is when Jeff, you know, was not involved. And he said they hemmed and they hawed and he backed out because Jeff wasn't involved. The way I heard the story was that Toby was going to buy it, that Jeff would be a key person, but he was not going to put Jeff in charge. He wanted somebody with more administrative background in wrestling who was going to run the thing. But Jeff would be a key player. And at the meeting, you know, they were pretty close on a price. And at the end, it was about Dixie. And Bob basically said he wanted Dixie to save face. And it was just basically like, Dixie, you know, he wanted Dixie to remain in her position as president while agreeing with Toby that Dixie wouldn't have any power. It'd be a figurehead position. And that, you know, whoever Toby hires to run the thing would run the thing, but Dixie would still be figurehead president. And Toby would not accept that, and that's why it fell apart, was because he would not sell it without protecting his daughter, at least keeping her involved, and he would not buy it with those restrictions, and that's why it fell through. Later, you know, and they didn't talk about this, but later when Jeff started the Global Force thing, you know, Toby was going to be the money backer of Global Force, but his basic thing was to Jeff, this is how I heard it, again, from people very, very close to Toby, was that Jeff first had to get a TV deal. You know, he goes, he wasn't going to put money in without a TV deal, because with a TV deal, they had a fighting chance, and with no TV deal, they had no chance. And Jeff didn't get the TV deal, and that's why Toby never went into Global Force, and Global Force never really went anywhere else. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people were wondering how they were going to handle the, you know, the Russo email to Mike Johnson and them getting kicked off Spike, and they punted. Didn't even talk. Russo's on there. You know, he would deny that it happened. You know, they probably would have had other people deny that it happened. But they had Sahadi there, you know, who they were interviewing, and Sahadi, you know, it's right in his book that that's exactly what happened. That's how they lost it. You know, the same details that I had, that you had, you know. And, you know, I mean, it's funny because, like, it kind of harkened back on everything, like, today, because Mike Johnson went in there and goes, none of this ever happened. It never happened. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if you remember the timeline, but, you know, I told you that they'd lost Spike probably, what, 2 weeks before anything ever came out?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I couldn't report it because I was told off the record, but I told a couple people in TNA, actually, you know, I told people in TNA, and then they came after me before I even did even reported it, because I hadn't even reported it yet. And then Ryan Satin ended up reporting it first, and then I reported it like a minute later because I already knew it was true. And you know, those guys, I mean, they didn't even have it for months, and they were still claiming they're in negotiations, blah blah blah. They dumped them over that, all that stuff. I mean, they never would go public with it because they had a contract and they were letting the contract expire. They did not cut them immediately. They, you know, they went till the end of the year. It was several more months before they dropped it, and they didn't want word on the street. They didn't want people to know that they dropped it. And they, you know, kind of would do this lip service. Well, we're in negotiations. They weren't, you know, they'd already made the decision. So, you know, that's what happened there, but they didn't touch that one. But the whole thing, you know, all the parts, Dixie Carter was the big heel in the piece. There was nobody speaking up in her defense. Jeff and Karen basically put out that, like, you know, she ruined their lives. And I'm sure from their standpoint, she did, you know. You know, Jeff did start the company. You know, they acted like I said, like with the first one, they acted like it was a lot more successful than it was. But, you know, they did have some good innovations, and there was a lot of positives, and they did break even for a couple of years there until Schaff and Hogan came in. And Hogan, you know, I mean, they definitely portrayed, especially Jeff, but everyone portrayed Hogan as being a big, big negative. And they showed remember the last scene with Hogan and Dixie?
Oh, when she grabbed his leg and begged him not to leave.
Right. So that was used as the proof, and I can't say they're wrong, of Dixie having no clue about wrestling, Dixie allowing herself to do that, thinking that, you know, it made her a TV star doing that, where, you know, Hogan and Bischoff came up with that idea, you know, and Hogan had full creative control of his stuff anyway. But I mean, they could have negotiated something else, and she was up for it. And it just made, I mean, that final Hogan scene made TNA and Dixie come off as so low rent, begging this guy who was leaving. It was so bad that people believed it was a storyline, and there was no way he was leaving like that, but he really was. That was his last appearance ever. So anyway, that was a lot of the stuff. That's my thoughts on it. So there you go.
All right, the CMLL Grand Prix.
All right, so this is August 7th, and they announced 22 names for this Grand Prix. This match is going to go on forever. Mystico, Titan, Volador Jr., Zelwa, Sobrano Jr., Barbero Carbonario, Mosco Dorado, Ultimo Guerrero, Hechicero, Angel De Oro, Niebla Roja, Bandito, Doki, Yujiro Takahashi. Talk about, like, what name does not fit in this list? Pac, Roderick Strong, Leon Cage, Austin Aries, Rohan Raja, who's coming from Maple Leaf Wrestling, you know, he's their rep, Blake Christian, Orange Cassidy, and Claudio Castagnoli. It's a elimination match, August 7th. That's 2 days after Grand Slam Mexico. It will sell out easily. The anniversary show, which is September 18th, is already sold out, and it's got like incredible demand for secondary market purchases. But that's the match. It'll be a memorable match. Last year they went 90 minutes, and I thought it was awesome. But there were people who thought that 90 minutes of a tourist crowd was not a good idea. But the crowd was hot the whole time, and the guys never stopped. And they had, you know, I mean, they had like Mike Bailey in there, you know, who's just, for that type of a match, was just absolutely incredible. And he's not in this year, unfortunately. But, you know, when you look at those lists, you know, with, you know, so many of the guys, Bandito and everything that in there, I mean, there's no reason. Claudio, I mean, my God, Dorada, who's just awesome. Sobron, I mean, this match is going to be, it will be a long spectacle for sure, and have an incredible amount of highlights.
Triple Mania.
Yeah, so the only thing new on Triple Mania is the Vegas show has the highest secondary market get-in price in the history of pro wrestling, because they only had, I think, 1,661 seats, sold out instantly. The lowest price to get in is $654.
Wow.
There has never been a show. I've seen some at up to 300 in the past, but, like, you know, no number, no get-in number ever, I think, has approached that. So it is a, it's you know, it probably will go down at some point. Maybe it won't, because, there's something, you know, there's a major scarcity of tickets for that show. There is a lot of people who want to go, who did not get tickets because that thing sold out instantly, because they went to a small building. And my gut is they went to a small building because they wanted to control the crowd, and that they want to bring in TV execs to see this in that controlled crowd, small, hot building, and get them, you know, try to get someone to, give them a TV deal, an American TV deal, because, you know, that's why it's in Vegas, because American execs will go to Vegas to watch this show. They're not going to go to Mexico City to watch a show as easily. They might, but not as easily. This was, I mean, going to Vegas to do the show was the smart move, no doubt about that. Whether they should have gone to a 7,000 seat building or a, you know, the Cox Center or whatever, the UNLV one that's 3,000, yeah, probably. But this is the one they chose.
All right, we got a couple of other notes here, then we'll get to TV. Any ratings notes?
Let me get my ratings page. So the Monday's Raw, you know, went against Home Run Derby. And while Home Run Derby is obviously not the World Cup, I mean, the competition they had the week before was the toughest that they maybe ever had, ever, for Raw in history. But they pulled, the Punk Sami Zayn world title match was, and you know, it was billed as Cody and Sami Zayn. So that was a draw. They did not do well the first day. They did not do well the second day even. But by the end of the week, they were up above the last few weeks. It was, almost 3 million viewers worldwide. More of them, you know, on a percentage basis, way more after the fact, you know, because of that. Now, this one on the first day numbers for Monday's show with the Home Run Derby, the difference, you know, the Home Run Derby was on Netflix live head to head on the exact same platform. And it was a bigger deal in the United States. It was not necessarily a bigger deal. I mean, there's probably other countries it was, you know, but, you know, World Cup's bigger everywhere in the world, you know, and much bigger in the United States than the Home Run Derby, but the Home Run Derby's on the same platform. I remember like Monday morning, I was getting people who were going, do you think this will be the lowest ever? I said, nah, it's not going to be lower than last week. But, you know, last week actually picked up pretty decently and did an okay number. It probably would have done a great number had it not been for the competition. This one, you know, I don't know how the whole week is going to go, but first day was the lowest ever because of that thing going head to head. And mostly because the United States, even though it was second in the United States to Home Run Derby, you know, the U.S. number was, you know, the lowest first day number ever. So we'll see how that turns out. But yeah, the one with the Punk and Sammy did pretty well after, you know, as far as replay buys, people will, you know, it was a memorable show. It was a world title change. People were willing to watch it later. So that was the story there. Most markets this week was down from then. Also, this week's show was not as good. You know, you didn't have a world title change. It was not as good a show. So whether it will do the kind of numbers late, we'll see. But let me see what other stuff there was. Collision did 409,000 viewers and 0.05, which is kind of a miracle, considering it went against the World Cup, which did. The World Cup game that went head-to-head, I believe, was, do I have the number here? It was closing in on 30 million, I believe. Maybe a little bit under 30 million. The World Cup game, Switzerland and Ireland did 29.95 million. That is closing in on 30 million, isn't it? And the McGregor fight, which, you know, obviously did very, very big numbers. You know, that was New Japan strong. You know, I mean, the New Japan show probably hurt a little bit as well, but, you know, but yeah, the, you know, 0.05 isn't that great, but probably better than I would have expected. 409 was way better than I expected. Lots of over 50s. They may have picked up a lot on Max. We'll never know. But overall, I mean, Hangman saved him. He probably added, I'm going to say, probably close to 100,000 viewers and maybe more. You know, I don't have the panel number, but probably more because, you know, I expected a lot closer to 300. The McGregor fight was not on CBS, obviously, but they did the weigh-ins. And the weigh-ins did 887,000 viewers and 0.14, which, to me, primetime CBS, big disappointment. You know, I don't know if they're going to do weigh-ins again. They didn't do well. That went against SmackDown. SmackDown was first. You know, aside from the McGregor weigh-ins, it was actually a pretty easy night of competition. 12,000 viewers and 0.24. But it was number one on cable. Number two on cable was the first 30-minute episode of Everything on the Menu with Braun Strowman. So the lead-in helped it. It did 630,000 viewers. It was 0.11, right? So the second half hour didn't do nearly as well. 630,000 viewers, 0.16. I take that back. The second episode did 372,000 and 0.11, okay. TNA, no number, didn't make the top 150. 0.02 or lower, because everything, I would have got the rating for everything over 0.03. So that's the second week in a row that they did not crack 0.02, so their numbers are bad. And I did not get anything from the Sunday WWE stuff. So that's pretty much it.
Right, a couple of MMA notes. Conor McGregor.
Yeah, he's petitioning to get his result changed to a no contest.
No contest.
I do not.
And he wants to fight again.
He ain't fighting again for a long time. I'm sure
he claims the Lord will bring him back for one more.
Oh, I'm sure the money will be there. Someone will pay him. I mean, he's got one more fight with UFC, and they may opt to just say, we just can't, you know. I mean, they could opt to say no, or they could just give him one last chance. I mean, he is a money draw, and then he'll be a free agent, and you know, there'll be people throwing money at him to do boxing and everything like that. Won't be pretty. He's done, you know. I mean, but you know, I mean, we've seen a lot of people done who continue to fight. That's, you know, and as long as people will pay him, he'll fight. But I when I heard he was trying to petition for the change of that from his loss to be overturned to a no contest, it's like, man, I thought he was off the stuff. Because I mean, he claimed due to the injury it should be a no contest. It's like, what? This is, you know. Anyway, yeah.
Dana Colby.
Well, it's nothing but Dana and Colby. So Colby Covington did an interview today, and he was talking about how, you know, he doesn't want to, he would consider WWE, but the deal breaker is that if you're in WWE, you're on the road 320 days a year. So I guess he's really up to date on WWE.
320 days a year.
Yeah.
Right, he's just a worker.
No, I think he probably has no clue what's going on. He claimed he talked to Levesque, but he's going to stay with real American Freestyle. They love him. You know, he's a name. And the Dana thing. So Dana claimed that Power Slap is doing 1 billion views a month on YouTube.
Well, it's not. And what's funny is you can actually see YouTube numbers. So I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. The last month they did 19 million, which isn't that bad.
That's not a billion.
It's not a billion. No. And they, you know, he always says how we got more YouTube viewers than the NFL. They do not. They have more YouTube viewers than UFC. They do not. I checked some of the, they don't have more than AEW even. In fact, they're not even close. I think AEW was like 90 million. You know, WWE is like 650 million. UFC is like 250, NBA is like 200. NFL isn't that big. They're not so big into YouTube, which I guess probably tells you the value of YouTube, given that the NFL is probably the number one sports franchise market in the world, and certainly by leaps and bounds in the United States. But you know, it's like this, we are now in an era where people just say everything, and it's like stuff like this, like, it took me like all of 30 seconds or a minute to check. Like, I believed it. But it's like nobody checks it. It's like, everyone's, you know. Now, I will say I didn't see a lot of people repeating what he said and acting like it was news. But I didn't see anyone going like, he's so full of it, which they did do, you know, with the White House show numbers beating the Super Bowl. They did get a lot of that, even though, my God, that whole White House thing. You know the whole gimmick with that White House replay numbers and everything? Do you know where it came from?
The gimmick.
You cannot watch the White House show, like, in its entirety. You can only watch matches. So if you want to watch the whole show after the fact...
Oh, like New Japan World, you have to watch it one match at a time?
No. New Japan World, you can turn it on the opening match.
Well, usually it's like they have it where you can watch... You choose one match, then you choose another match.
You can pick...
It's blocked out. They don't call it chapters, but they call it something else. But anyway, that's the gimmick.
Yeah, but you can on New Japan, you can watch the whole show. If you tune it in from the opening match, you do not have to change. You don't have to log in again, and you'll watch the whole show. With Paramount, they block it into matches like New Japan, but you have to log in. So every viewer on delay, if they want to watch the show, at minimum, you're going to be seven people. At maximum, you can be 20 or 30 people, you know, if you just break it up and watch things a bunch of times and everything. But I don't even think even with that they could ever get to 34 million. But yeah, they're counting people 5, 7, 10 times. Maybe that's the gimmick. And so there you go.
All right, Ben Askren.
He's fighting, or he's wrestling on Saturday against Bilal Muhammad. It's coming up. 42nd birthday. I feel bad for Bilal Muhammad because he's probably going to beat him, and it's going to be so sad, you know. Like, I wouldn't even want to wrestle the guy. I mean, I guess it'd be okay, destroy me in, you know, 15 seconds. But you know, even in the state he's in, he said he's nowhere close to peak shape, but he's getting better, and he maxes out on the bike once a week, and he said that every week for 12 straight weeks he is beating his old records, so he is getting better. And he had some really interesting comments, very inspirational story there with Ben Askren. I mean, coming back, I mean, just the fact he's doing it is amazing. Yeah, in Milwaukee on his birthday, and wrestling Bilal Muhammad on the Real American Freestyle Show.
All right, before we get to AEW, very quickly, Connor Benn and Ryan Garcia.
Yeah, they're doing a fight on September the 12th, and this is a boxing match. So this is for the W. This is very unique in so many ways. A month ago, Dana White and Oscar De La Hoya, you know, and Zuffa and Golden Boy, they were sending nasty legal letters to each other. But to make this fight, now Oscar, in fairness to Oscar, he has always said that he will work with anyone, even Dana White, to make a fight happen. UFC, Dana, Nick, their thing was never to work with anyone. You know, they wanted to be an autonomous organization, create their own world champions and all that. But you know, they never, you know, like they never made, you know, they never made Randy Couture and Fedor, they never made Brock and Fedor. They never got, you know, Fedor, you know, because they wouldn't work with anyone. It's like they would not, that was the one thing they would never do, is work with anyone. Connor kind of forced him to work with boxing because of there's so much money in his fight with Floyd. But the general rule was they would never work with anyone. Well, Turkey, you know, it's like Turkey's the big daddy of boxing, and Turkey told everyone that, you know, he wanted this fight. And Conor Benn is under contract to Zuffa for a ridiculous amount of money. Garcia is under contract to De La Hoya, and they had to work together. So we're going to have press conferences with Dana and Oscar, who hate each other, promoting this fight on September 12th, which is also head-to-head with a UFC show. Although I'm sure that they could move the UFC to Friday that week. Because they would both be on Paramount, and they would be, you know, head-to-head competition. Or, you know, they may just keep them both and just, you know, move the UFC up earlier in the day and let, you know, but they'd have fights going. They would be head-to-head, but probably the UFC show, they would start early, so the main event is over long before the Ben and Garcia fight. I'm sure that they will not do the main events head-to-head. But, yeah, Dana's going to have to. Dana and Nick Khan and Oscar De La Hoya are all working together, and it's for the WBC championship. And you know that the big thing with Zuffa was that they wanted to get rid of all these sanctioning bodies, and they want to create their own world titles. But you know, that's their goal, and it's still their goal. But for now, everyone is going to play because Turki Alashik wants the fight, and he's the one who provides the money for everyone, and he's the ultimate power in boxing. And I think that he enjoys this manipulation power that he has over these alpha male promoters.
All right, we're gonna do Dynamite here. We've got time for that. We'll see if we have any time for NXT. This show opened Actually, it opened with the pep talk. Moxley's giving Will a pep talk backstage, and it's a pep talk, but it's also one of those pep talks where he's basically telling him, I'm going to kill you someday, but Ospreay hasn't figured that out yet.
Yeah, well, they're definitely doing something with Omega and Moxley and Ospreay long after Wembley, for sure, which they should be.
So they run down all the matches on this show, and they all of a sudden mention that coming up next, opening the show, is a match with Christian and Copeland versus Wheeler Yuta and Daniel Garcia for the World Tag Team titles. You know they announced this 1 hour before the show went on the air?
No.
An hour.
Well, WWE just said two.
Dave, it's a tag team title match, dude. We had two matches announced.
Dave, hold on a second. That happens all the time.
Last week's show.
I'm not saying they shouldn't have announced it. Of course
it sounds like you're defending it here.
I'm not defending it. I'm just saying.
I don't care what WWE does.
It's not WWE. I don't care. They do it every single week. Listen, they do this every single week. You want to cry about it every week?
Yes, I will.
It's like, yes, they could have announced it ahead of time. They don't, okay? They don't. He has a strategy that he wants to announce matches on the day of the show. Whether it works or not, I don't know. This is the strategy. You know, and WWE has the same strategy.
But hold on a second.
They sometimes announce title matches after the show started in both companies.
Can I ask you a question?
Well, what?
Did you know before the show last week that show was going to do a great number?
Oh, yeah.
Because I did.
Because of the main event and no
title match, right?
The main event and no competition, and the Kyle Fletcher match too.
Yep. Yeah. And yeah, no World Cup, right?
No World Cup. Which is why they did.
So if you were in charge and you knew that show was going to do a great number,
yes,
would you not have built up a card for the following week's Dynamite?
100%.
Or would you not have mentioned that Hangman Page was appearing on Collision on Saturday?
Well, the Page thing ended up doing the number, so I can't criticize him now. I mean,
the show did a good number, but like, had they advertised him?
I wish that they had.
Had they advertised him for this show, perhaps? Had they advertised last week that the World Tag Team titles were going to be on the line on this show?
No,
they had one match announced last week, which was Andrade and
Doyle.
That's the only match that they had announced last week on Dynamite.
Yes. Yes, they should have announced more. They should have, especially because they had, you know, but, you know, I mean, like the match, they did announce the women's match. I didn't know about Fletcher and Commander until I watched the show.
They didn't announce it.
Yeah. I mean, not that that's like a giant match, but fuck, what a match. That match was fantastic.
I think that if you want to announce a match an hour before the show, then it should be Fletcher and Commander. But if you've got a World Tag Team Championship
match, maybe you should have built that up. Oh yeah,
on the show last week.
Well, they could have done something last week. There was interaction, but there was, you know, I mean, they did attack him, but there was no real. I mean, I didn't know it was coming. So yeah, they could have done more, you know, and all that.
The match was fine.
The match was.
I would not say it was a great match or anything like
that. No, the match was fine. It wasn't, but it was a setup, you know, to set up Moxley and Claudio challenging them for redemption.
First we had Copeland and Christian. Well, Copeland and Christian win, and then the Bucks are there clapping for them. And Excalibur goes, "These Bucks, they want to work their way back into title contention." I was like, Wheeler Yuta and Daniel Garcia just got a title shot. How hard could this be?
And plus they just won the match at Forbidden Door.
Yes, they did.
So they should be.
I don't know why they have to work or how they're going to have to work their way back, but that's what they said.
Yes.
So then the Dogs hit the ring. They go after Copeland and Cage, even though we just saw this match at the last pay-per-view. They shot the same angle they shot before the last pay-per-view, where they stomped on Christian's arm. I just saw that. And then the Bang Bang Gang runs down to make the save. Finley grabs a shillelagh. Jay White grabs it, makes a save. And then Jay White and Christian have a stare down. The fans chant, "Hug it out." Christian does not hug it out. He leaves, and Jay White plays air guitar with the shillelagh. And I don't think any of this. Do we have a match for the pay per view based off of this?
Not yet.
Okay.
But we still got a lot of spots left on the pay per view.
We sure do. We have five matches, and 1 week.
Six.
What's the sixth match? They have five matches, and they have the pre show thing, which is the celebration for the Rougeaux.
Okay.
That's Copeland the sixth thing.
Copeland and Christian against Moxley and Claudio.
They announced that match?
Yes.
Copeland and Christian
against Moxley and Claudio.
All right, I don't have that on this lineup here, but I'm going to take your word for it.
It's on the show. It's already out. Yes. All right.
Then we had the announcement that Harley would be out for a while after a match with Sheeta.
What's the scoop there?
I don't know. I presume it's a worked injury, but I don't know.
Well, I'm sure it's a worked injury. I'm just wondering, like, what's it a cover for?
It might not be a cover for anything. Where's Swerve? Where's Hangman? Where's 50 people?
I don't know where Swerve is.
Yeah, he's just vanished.
Well, guys vanish all the time, but yeah, they should do something with Swerve. Especially, you know, especially coming up now. You know, they have a pay-per-view.
So then, this was when I really started getting set off. They actually showed Dave Meltzer. They actually showed a recap of Collision, yet did not mention Hangman in the recap.
I know.
What?
I agree. That was dropping the ball. And again, it's weird. It's weird.
They recapped it, Dave. They recapped the show, but not the return of Hangman in the recap.
Nor did they mention.
How?
Maybe he's not coming back so soon. I don't know. I don't know. The whole Hangman thing. Obviously, it was a way to try to do a number on a tough night. It succeeded. As far as how it was done, why it was done, should have been I don't want to say it should have been a surprise. They were looking for something to do TV rating, but it should have been.
It was basically a surprise with 18 hours notice.
Well, it worked though.
It worked for some sickos, but like.
It worked.
Presumably, it could have done a lot better if you would have announced this in advance. Hey, the return of Hangman coming up Saturday.
You think 409,000 viewers going against a competition they went against?
No, that's
Collision?
Impressive, Dave. But if you would have announced it on television on Wednesday on a show that conceivably did over 1 million viewers, it probably would have done more than 409.
Maybe this did way over 409, too. You know?
It would have done more than whatever this did.
I would agree.
Thank you.
I have always said that thing should have been Hangman's return to television. If it was me, should have been advertised for a month.
Yeah.
A month. Video every Wednesday with a date coming back in Roanoke, Virginia for a month, okay?
Okay. And then when it did happen, probably should have been mentioned on the following show.
Yeah, and it should be, and they should have a direction for him too. He's one of the biggest stars in the company, and obviously, if there's any question whether he was a big star or not, that number right there, because that's Hangman's number. You know what I mean? He proved that he is a draw. So yeah, you should have him. You know, I mean, I don't know if he's ready to wrestle. I don't know what the situation is, but he should be in that mix and talked about like one of the top guys. Absolutely, 100%.
We had an Andrade promo. He revealed that he had, and I quote, MJF's ring. Not one of his rings. It's back to there's only one.
The one that Will Ospreay stole
and he
gave
got it from a friend.
So Will Ospreay and Andrade are secret friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Renee interviewed the conglomeration.
Why? But why?
I don't know.
Why would
on Will, the bottom of my priority list on this show.
Why would Will, we need to find out why Will gave him the ring. You know, why didn't Will keep the ring?
Maybe
himself?
His friend was Bandito. Bandito has a ring that we've totally forgotten about because they've done nothing.
No, they said it was MJF's ring, though.
She said, is that MJF's ring? I think. And he just said, I got it from a friend. And she said, was that friend Ospreay? And he said, how you know? So he didn't actually answer.
Yeah.
We'll see. So then Renee interviews a conglomeration, and literally their promo is, where are all the trios? And so Ricochet and the Gates of Agony show up, and then the Swirl and Jay Lethal showed up. They all beat him down. Ricochet teased the Swirl and Jay Lethal could join the Demand.
Yeah. So looks like a setup for the Gates of Agony and Will and Ricochet getting a match, maybe at the pay-per-view. Maybe.
Better find out next week.
Yeah.
Andrade and Jake Doyle, where if Andrade wins, he gets a shot at the national title. You'll be unsurprised to hear that he won. And hit the DM after a back elbow. It's a pretty good match. And they announced a match will be taking place at Redemption. So they did announce a match here.
Yep.
So then we have Kenny and the Bucks coming out for Kenny's celebration. This whole thing went 21 minutes. And it started with the Bucks. They're kind of putting over Kenny. And then all of a sudden there's a bright flash of light. And everyone is like, what the fuck's going on? And the announcers start giggling. And they never explain what happened. But what happened was someone just set off the pyro in the middle of this promo. It scared the hell out of everybody. So Kenny then gives a big victory speech. And says we're going to get the best version of Kenny Omega. Ospreay comes out. He asks the Bucks to leave so he can talk to Kenny. Gives him a big speech about how the best belt machine is back. I've idolized you for the last 10 years. You're my hero. Every time I step into the ring, it's a tribute to you. August 30th, we're going to show everybody where the best wrestle. So they're about to shake hands when Kevin Knight comes out. And Kevin Knight comes down and tells Ospreay to please leave. And Kenny says, no, he can stay. And so Kenny says, I know you're going to give this guy a shot at, or Kevin says, I know you're going to give this guy a shot at Wembley, but I'm still owed a world title shot. Everybody boos. He says, MJF isn't here to give it to me, so you should. Kenny then says, hold on a second. You were given a promise by MJF and you want me to, you're going to hold me to his word? He goes, I'm not going to do that. But he says, I am willing to give you a shot because you have the it factor. You have everything a superstar possesses. You look great. You're fast. You jump high. But he says, this Don Callis thing. You don't need to hang around with Don. He's basically trying to convince Kevin Knight to dump Don Callis and go back to being a good guy again. And Kevin pretty much just basically says, no, it's, there's no goodness left in my heart. There's only greatness. He clobbers Kenny. Ospreay goes after him. He avoids him. As Kevin Knight is fleeing,
Darby attacks.
As he is fleeing, he gets attacked and his ass beat by Darby Allin. Brian Cage then runs down to beat up Darby Allin. The rest of the family then starts heading down to the ring. The Death Riders then show up to protect Will and Kenny. And that's your match for the pay-per-view.
Yeah. They did the best job they could to make Kenny Omega and Kevin Knight interesting. I don't know if on the surface, that's not a pay-per-view main event.
I really like Kevin Knight, but
I mean, on the surface, it's not.
I don't know, man.
They did, but Kenny's work on the mic was tremendous. I think that, you know, like, he did the best that he could do under the circumstances. And Knight did, too. You know, it's just a question of, is he ready? And I think it's a little early, but we know the match was supposed to be MJF, and that match would have been a very successful pay per view main event. Didn't happen. Not, you know, they did it early. Okay, did they have a great idea? Someone ready right away?
They didn't.
No, obviously not. Obviously, I mean, he could have gone with Fletcher. He could have gone with Okada. Those at least would have been Andrade. You know, I mean, I think all those would have been stronger. But this was the choice. They didn't. You know, wouldn't have been my choice. But you know, I mean, at the same time, it is a gimme match. I think they want everyone to know he's not losing because these Wembley tickets are going real, real well right now. And I mean, the one thing is Omega and Will it's a hot commodity match. It's really a hot match. I mean, they're over 31 now. I mean,
I love the idea that we've switched the title. We've hot potatoed the title for the first time in AEW history over the last 6 months. And now he's worried we got to make sure people know what the main event is for Wembley.
Well, obviously they want to sell tickets for Wembley. Actually, that makes all the sense.
Well, you know,
the
other thing you do is not have him defend the title. I mean, there's other things that he could do.
There's a pay-per-view. I mean, he should have defended
the title. We just had a pay-per-view where the champion didn't defend the title.
Yeah, I know. And guess what? It didn't do as well as the other pay-per-views.
Well, there were a lot of reasons it didn't do as well. That's one of them.
And this one's one of them, too. And this one's the same thing. Has all the same reasons. The problem with this one is like, they added a pay-per-view to do Kenny and MJF. And then they decided to do it before the pay-per-view, so now they have a pay-per-view. He had to defend. I mean, like, he could have defended against Fletcher. I mean, Fletcher is awesome. I mean, it you know, I mean, there's no reason not to. They'd have, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he would have killed Kenny, but, you know, with the way he wrestles. But, I mean, as far as just a match, I mean, you know, Fletcher to me is, he was so great tonight. And, but they went with Kevin, and we'll see. It's not, you know, on paper, is that a pay-per-view main event? The answer is no. Will they pull it off because of goodwill and stuff like that? You know, I mean, it's also a problem because it's like everyone knows the show is all in. This show is, you know, when we know the all in main event, and we, you know, I guess we don't know the women's one because, you know, Mercedes is challenging. And it's probably going to be Willow if she beats Tekla. You know, by the way, Tekla and you know, the Tekla, Julia Hart, and Sky Blue are going Saturday night to challenge for the Trios Championship with Stardom, and Julia is staying there because she's going to be in the five-star Grand Prix. So and then Willow, I think the same night, is in for Tokyo Joshi Pro, so they're both there, you know, and then coming back and everything. But I think there's a good shot that Willow's winning over Tekla, but we'll see.
Jungle Boy did a promo offering an open challenge for Collision on Saturday,
which will be Nick Wayne,
Brodito and Aaron Solo versus Brodito versus Aaron Solo and Nick Camerota, which was in fact not a 50-50 match. They squashed him in 2 minutes.
Did you see
the place loved it?
Did you see that freaking press slam that Bandito did on Nick Camerota? That guy's like 280.
He's a very strong man, but it was the second. I shouldn't say there was a worse press slam on the show. Still not over the other one, as we'll get
to. Which one?
When Brian Cage press slammed Darby's skull into the post.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
And then
he bumped
to the ground.
Oh, God. That was horrible.
Dude.
That was horrible. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. That was. I should be immune to Darby doing this stuff, and I'm not. I mean, that was bad. Yeah.
So then we had a classic moment. Kyle Fletcher is doing an interview. Brodito walks in celebrating their win. Kyle gets mad. And that's why we have Kyle and Bandito at the pay-per-view.
Is that it?
Yeah. Okay. That's what happened. He got mad, and then he challenged him later, and then it was on.
Yeah, they
because he walked into his interview. Yeah. I've seen better builds to matches than that one. Kyle and Commander was the best thing on the show by miles.
That match was great. That match was great.
They were both incredible.
I mean, the thing with this match that was the most impressive to me, I mean, Commander does all his stuff and he's just spectacular. I mean, I think he's the best flyer in the business right now. But the selling by Kyle Fletcher for like Kyle Fletcher is way bigger than him, so it's kind of like a visual problem. And his selling was like so great. I mean, he beat the guy. You know, the guy's not going to beat any top guys. We all know it going in. It kind of sucks in that way. But at the, you know, the last couple of minutes when Commander's getting the near falls, like the place was going nuts. I mean, it's like, it was Kyle Fletcher is so great. You know, I mean, Commander is too, but oh my God, the way he sold and everything. And you know, and it's a, you know, he beats this guy, Commander, set up Bandito, doing the same match, probably the same ending. You know, those guys are, you know, I mean, there is a pattern here, and these guys are great, and, you know, Bandito doesn't win on pay-per-view, and Commander doesn't win on TV much. But, man, they give you great action, don't they?
Then Kyle goes to unmask Commander. Takeshita, who apparently has not gone to Japan for the G1 yet, runs down, lays him out. Takeshita poses with the belt, even though he's leaving for a month. Okada shows up and gives Takeshita Rainmaker. Kyle and Okada then have a stare down over the belt, and then Brodito shows up and they attack both of them.
I got the impression that Wembley's going to be a three-way with Okada, Kyle, and Takeshita.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be.
Would be something.
After talking for 21 straight minutes, Kenny got another interview backstage He's talking about Kevin, and then Darby shows up. Darby says, quit trying to turn this guy. He's not a good guy. I'm going to beat his ass next week and take his belt. Kenny says, go for it. Darby then says, Kenny, you're just wasting your time with this guy. He storms off. Moxley then walks up and says, Darby's right. Some people are who they are. They can't be anything else, even if they try. And he looks at Kenny's belt, and he leaves. So they're slow building that one.
Does he mean himself, or does he mean...
Oh, he's talking about himself.
Or does he mean Omega?
I'm pretty sure he's talking about himself.
Well, remember,
Omega... He could be talking about Omega as well.
Omega cheated to beat him for the title.
I don't know why he would be encouraging Kenny to be his old self and cheat to beat Will Ospreay, who he's...
No, he's encouraging Will Ospreay to do anything to beat Kenny.
Well, yes, but it looks like if your theory is correct, he's playing both sides here.
No. He's still mad at Kenny for cheating to beat him while Kenny's pretending to be a good guy.
Mm. Renee interviewed the Brawling Birds on the ramp, and they just talked. Nothing built up here. They're
going
to
they're going for the tag team titles.
At Wembley.
At Wembley, yeah.
That's months away.
Yeah, they're starting the build for it.
What's going on for the pay-per-view in a week and a half?
Are they
doing anything there?
They may be doing, did they set anything up for that?
No, that's my point.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, obviously that they, you know, the Brawling Birds and Megan Bain and Lena Cross is, you know, I mean, it's being set up for that show.
We had Jericho doing a pre-tape promo. And so basically he said, I had fun fighting you, Ciampa. We should do it again. You bring the pain, I'll bring the pain maker. And then Ciampa says, well, it'll be the pain maker versus a psycho killer. And so basically this match is set up because they had fun on the one they just did with a clean finish.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, he threw dirt in his face.
Ciampa issues yet another open challenge for Collision.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brian Cage versus Darby. We talked about this. Brian Cage goddamn near killed this guy.
That spot.
Head first into the post. I couldn't even get into the show after that. It's like, oh my God. Darby hit a coffin drop onto the steps, two in the ring, got the pin. Like, rubbing his head.
It was actually a hell of a match, but my God, that spot.
It was just crazy.
Yeah.
All right, then the show was now 2 hours long. We went to a commercial at the top of the hour. A great time to do a commercial break. Come back for, in fact, an interview with the Jet. And Don cuts him off and says, I gave you the world title, Kenny. Oh, what a bad day for you. Suck it up. Everything you've ever had in your life that was good was because of me. Jet, if you want two belts, go take it from that guy. And then Speedball shows up and he tells Jet to take Kenny's advice. The people love you enough. I love you enough. Jet basically tells him, get out of here. I don't need your love. So then... 7 minutes into the overrun, the main event begins. It is Willow and Hyann and Maya World versus Divine Dominion and Mercedes.
I don't know that this is going to do well.
At the 10-minute mark of the overrun, they went to another commercial. Dave, I got a serious question.
Yes. I wouldn't have gone this long.
Hold on.
Yeah?
Is this a situation where they, like, owe advertisers money for, like, something, and they have to do more commercials, and Tony doesn't want to do more commercials in the two hours, and so he has to go longer to get these commercials in? What is with these overruns?
Well, if you're going to go that
22 minutes.
Okay, you have to have a commercial. You have to have a commercial. You can't go 22 minutes without a commercial.
Is he being paid for this...
I don't
30% more than he gives this company every week.
I don't know what the deal is, but he has, and they have an agreement that he can go long because his show does four times the ratings of the show that follows. So
is he getting paid for this? Is he doing it out of the goodness of his heart?
I would guess. Knowing Tony, I'm guessing he's doing it out of the goodness of his heart because he loves to give people as much wrestling as he can. Seriously, he does.
I'm well, Dave, aware of that. Well aware of that fact.
Yeah.
So, yes, they went 22 minutes past the top of the hour. Mercedes pinned Hyann.
This is going to be
a moneymaker.
But I guess we'll see. I'll tell you what, though. Here's the thing. It's like, he'll see. You know, they you know, the whole thing of, you know, you got to give women main events. You know how that goes. And this is, if they do well, then they'll get more. I mean, they'll prove it. They had Mercedes, who's their biggest woman draw right now. And they had Willow, who's their most popular woman right now. So, you know, if they made it work, good. If they didn't make it work, that's a lesson, you know. And I don't, you know, I don't know the answer. But it's an interesting experiment. You know, the match was good.
It was fine.
Yeah, it was a good match.
So after 2 hours and 22 minutes, not one mention whatsoever.
No mention.
Commentary. They didn't even mention on commentary.
They didn't mention Adam Page. There should have been a follow-up. I know. You're right.
Wasn't there. I was baffled.
Yeah, I was baffled when he showed up Saturday with
50 excuses about why they did it the last second. Oh, he's going to do something to the pay-per-view, and they needed to have this many shows, and they just had to do it. It turns out, I don't know. I have no idea now why he was brought back.
Well, of course we know he did it. They did it because he was going against the World Cup and needed something special. I know why he did it. Now, why this wasn't built up for a month and why it wasn't followed up on, completely different. I have no idea.
Not only that, but like, it was in his hometown.
Well, close.
Well, I mean, close enough that, like, why didn't you advertise this to try to sell tickets to the show?
They did it the last minute. But you're right. Of course you're right. Of course they should have. Look, of course they should have advertised it. Like I said, they should have advertised it for a month. Of course. Why they didn't, I can't answer that question. I don't know. Maybe he came up with the idea at the last minute, going like, oh my God, I need something big for Saturday.
Just figured it out 18 hours before the show.
Hey, sometimes you come up with ideas when you're under pressure.
All right. Well, anyway, next week on Dynamite, we got Kenny Omega, Ospreay, and Moxley against Brian Cage, Hechicero, and Jake Doyle.
So Hechicero is got his visa. So almost, Commander's back, Hechicero's back. So Gabe Kidd is not back. And Davis is back. Mordos isn't back. But I think everyone else is now. Mordos is still working Mexico this week. I know that.
Yep. And then,
And Clone. I think Clone maybe too, because Clone's still working in Mexico and he's not in he hasn't been back in AEW in like months.
And also Darby on Kevin Knight for the AEW TNT title. And then this coming Saturday, we got Collision with Sheeta versus Queen Aminata for the TBS title. Jack Perry versus Nick Wayne and Tommaso Ciampa Open Challenge is the lineup. And then the big show of the weekend, besides when you go to Mexico, is Saturday night's main event. Cody and CM Punk versus Sammy and Gunther. Danhausen, JD, no DQ, with all of the Knicks getting involved. Brie Bella and Paige versus Fatal Influence for the tag team titles. Bayley versus Lyra. And Roman Reigns and Jalen Brunson will appear. So that is Saturday.
Do a promo together. Yeah.
All right, Dave's going to finish the Observer, everybody. It's going to be up tomorrow. At which point he will go to Arena Mexico for the first time. Look at that.
First time ever in Arena Mexico, yeah.
Yep. So yeah, we'll...
After 26 years of wanting to do this one. Maybe longer.
Well, we'll talk to you about that when you get back. Have a good trip. And that's it, everybody. We'll talk to you again after a while.